Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome, ladies and gents, boys and girls, to a new episode of the Bad Signal Podcast. I think I am allowed to borrow that from the Red Sox, since they were the ultimate dumpster fire of any baseball team. Nothing broke my heart more than not watching the Red Sox this summer. But we are well into football season, and that is why we have a brand new platform. Will, introduce yourself.
Hello, everybody. My name is Will.
Yeah.
I am Courtney's producer.
You sound like the girliest girl. I might as well just put fucking pigtails on you. What the hell was that?
I used to have pigtails.
No, I mean, no. What was that introduction? You're not doing yourself any justice by that intro. Will got a promotion over the last couple of weeks when he decided to join our new show. He went from intern Will to producer Will.
It feels good.
He's actually doing a decent job, besides almost getting sick and ruining our launch.
Yeah. Besides that, good.
Will basically had COVID 2 days ago.
I did. Test came back negative.
Will
but
had
for the sake
COVID.
Of this conversation, I had COVID, yes.
Do you know that I literally almost called every single one of your friends in a panic? I almost called Kermit, John from Scranton. I almost called your old boss, Steve Robinson, just to be like, what the hell was I supposed to do if you got sick?
I really don't know. I didn't have a contingency plan set in place.
Yeah, you didn't. You didn't. Well, luckily you're not sick, and luckily you're here today.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we got to talk about other people that are sick in the NFL. We knew this going into football season, that this virus that has ransacked, the White House, all of Major League Baseball had canceled a bunch of seasons. They've finally gotten through a wacky season, 62-game season.
Winning percentage to get into the playoffs, too, which is
strange. Oh, my God. The fact that the Houston Astros were in the playoffs is just the biggest embarrassment.
And it looks like they're going to win it again.
No, they're not.
That's talking
I don't even
baseball.
Want to.
That's
you,
talking baseball.
If you want to infuriate me and make me throw something across the room, then we will talk about baseball. I don't want to talk about that. Let's get into the topics. So the NFL takes this very seriously.
Air quotes.
Exactly. They, before the season, and I found it very interesting that while the world and the nation is following Dr. Anthony Fauci and everything that he has to say, the Center for Disease Control and all of the protocols that he understands about pandemics and viruses, they hired their own guy. And his name is Dr. Alan Sills. And Dr. Alan Sills is like, he's like the eraser guy. Every time he comes out with a statement, it's like slapping some Flex Seal on the Band-Aid. Every time that a player in the NFL tests positive, the league is going to open an investigation. So, of course, the Patriots are under a careful watched eye by the league.
Now, what does that consist of?
The rumblings out of Foxborough that the Patriots are not happy with how the league has come down and breathing down their necks, flagging them for an unknown amount of people that have had contact tracing with Cam Newton. They find it very curious. They're now going big brother into the organizations and putting every camera in every single room. And they are watching and violating to an extreme. And we know that openly by the fact that the Raiders have donated almost $2 million to the retired players fund for all their violations. The Patriots are pissed. And listen, Will, I know where this is going, okay? When I get memes from people that I haven't spoken to in years that say Chestnut Checkers with the title, and it shows Patrick Mahomes and Stephon Gilmore, who after 2 days of Cam Newton testing positive, the NFL just, I don't know, hurries them onto a plane, a sick plane, a regular plane, forces them to go in an entire 24-hour span to go play a football game when they know, ignoring science and ignoring everything that they know about the incubation period about this virus, to make them go play a football game. And then they're surprised when someone else tests positive. I think it's bullshit. I think what the league is trying to do right now is taking advantage of the players that say, hey, yeah, you know, we're going to risk our lives and our families, risking lives, you know, of course, taking that lightly. We're going to risk our livelihoods and the health of our families to play a football season. The NFL is going full steam ahead, and they are not even considering to cancel the season, put it on pause. I'm not saying cancel the season, put it on pause to figure this out. Because it's starting to get out of control, Will. I mean, am I wrong? And why do I think that the Patriots are going to be the only goddamn team that gets like a draft pick taken away?
Because that's how it always
works. Exactly. And so everyone inside that organization, including Bill Belichick, is pissed. And meanwhile, outside of the organization, I've heard word from Chris Mortensen that says Roger Goodell's handling of the pandemic with the NFL is Hall of Fame worthy. Says who? Okay. It's clearly not spoken by the owners or the coaches or the people that are maintaining peace during this time. It's insane. But I will tell you this. I'm kind of liking this Bill Belichick that we're getting in the COVID year. If you haven't noticed, Will, and I'm not sure if I'm the only one, Bill Belichick this season, 2020, being the most fucked up year imaginable, we're seeing a lot more transparency inside the Fort Knox,
yeah,
that is Gillette Stadium. He's being a little more candid and coy, and you can kind of read the tea leaves in between the lines of more things that are going on behind those closed doors.
Yeah, especially at the quarterback position, too.
That is a very interesting situation to be brought up. The quarterback situation. Now, the Patriots better pray and pray on their knees that Cam Newton comes back healthy, because I gotta say, if you want to see how Bill Belichick gambles with suck, you're gonna see Brian Hoyer starting again on Sunday. Brian Hoyer was embarrassingly bad. He must be a hell of a scout team guy in the room, because he didn't show them anything on the field. And this is a guy that's been in the league for 12 years. Is he supposed to be a serviceable quarterback?
Supposed to be.
Hoyer looked clueless in more ways than one. And it was infuriating to watch on so many different angles, because the Patriots, yeah, if, ands, and buts, if they had Cam Newton in there, if they had all their starters healthy, they would have won that game. Or at least they would have taken a lead against the Super Bowl champions. Well, it didn't happen. And not only did Brian Hoyer suck, but he didn't really suck that bad. I mean, listen, he had 3 drives of 13 plays or more. That's why he's going to start again on Monday, because his backup, Jared Stidham, I mean, he was the suckiest of sucks. It is so embarrassing after all of these months and us making such a big deal about this heir apparent to Tom Brady, and this kid can't even fucking throw a screen pass. I mean, airmailing every single ball. He had happy feet in the pocket. He looked nervous. He acted nervous. Where the hell have you been? Is he? I mean, not only is he not taking snaps at practice, but Jared Stidham is so far away from being a starting quarterback in this league. It's kind of scary to think about the future of the Patriots right now. And it kind of makes me reconsider my notion that the Patriots shouldn't re-sign Cam Newton until the offseason. It's really making me reconsider everything.
Well, when was the last time the Patriots signed somebody mid-season to an extension?
Kyle Van Noy. And I had to ask one of my scout team guys about that. Typically, the Patriots, they don't go and redo contracts mid-season. That's why once the season starts, it's, you know, you go in, you lock the door, and then you come out on the other side that's just Clockwork Orange. It's stuff that Bill Belichick says all the time. I'm not here to talk about contracts. We just finished the season, blah, blah, blah. There's a time and a place for everything. But at least Cam Newton has some leverage now with Bill Belichick in the infuriation that he has with showing that Jared Stidham, he's just not in his good graces. He's just going to go and tell the media, oh yeah, you know, Jared went to go get an MRI at the hospital for his hip. When the hell do the Patriots ever talk about injuries that blatantly?
Never, ever. They treat it like a hockey team does. They just don't disclose injuries.
I mean, I think
upper body, head.
Oh, it's not even that. It's like, oh, it never happened.
That's right.
It just never happened. So if the Patriots want to go forward, I would highly suggest, or at least it should be talked about in the airwaves up here in New England. Why are they not going out and starting to look for a serviceable veteran quarterback? Colin Kaepernick. I mean, I'm kidding. Haha, just joking. They need to get someone because if Cam gets hurt and, you know, his injury is passed, luckily he's been healthy for the most part this season. If Cam gets hurt, I mean, you're going to say goodbye to, you know, every game late in the season for this team because the quarterback situation was embarrassingly bad.
Yeah, I mean, they looked a little bit like the Chicago Bears out there.
Well, the Chicago Bears beat Tom Brady last night. Did you know that?
I did.
Nick Foles got the most of Tom Brady once again. Switching gears outside of New England. Getting into that next part of the podcast where we talk about female gambling.
Yeah,
Is this a female gambling podcast?
No.
Yeah. You did not do me any justice.
I didn't do myself any justice either.
I mean, what the hell have you been doing this whole time? I don't understand. Like, have you been paying attention to anything that I've been talking about? No?
Yes.
No.
Well, I feel like I'm obligated to say yes there, though.
Okay. Tom Brady.
Night. Yeah, Tom.
I think he watched Brian Hoyer a little too closely. He forgot how many downs there were in the game.
Forgot he was Tom Brady, too.
Listen, I know a lot of people are going to say, oh my God, that's so funny. It's embarrassing to watch. I can't even watch Tom Brady anymore. Do you know what I'm sick of? Tampa Bay. You know what I'm sick of? Seeing every goddamn Buccaneers game on my TV. Am I the only one? I mean, okay.
No, you're not.
I think I would love to take a poll of this audience and find out how many people are actually really upset that Brady is leaving? How many people are actually paying attention now that we're like full blown into the season? Because I couldn't give two shits, to be honest. I don't want to watch it. I see enough of the cadences. I see Tom's wide receivers not coming back to the ball, not running the right routes, and Brady barking at them at the end of the game. And at least his head coach is calling him out on his ass. You know, at least Bruce Arians has some balls to put Tom and hang him out to dry in front of the media because Bill Belichick won this war, okay? And you don't think that bringing in Cam Newton, I said this months ago, if you don't think that bringing in Cam Newton was a direct reaction from Tom Brady going down to Tampa Bay and breaking all of the rules of COVID and going to private schools and getting tickets on football fields, you know, for practicing with his wide receivers against league rules, putting in the extra time that he never did in New England. If you don't think that that motivated Bill Belichick to say, you know what, fuck you. I'm going to go get another guy to replace you. I am fully, fully happy with the Cam Newton era to make me forget about my old boyfriend, Tom Brady.
Right.
I've just completely out of sight, out of mind. And you know what? I trusted Bill the whole time.
Well, he's a shiny new toy, Cam.
It's not even that he's a shiny new toy. I just don't want to be reminded of those waning days where everyone was frustrated and biting their nails. I'm sorry. Anyone in New England here that wants to say, oh, I loved the last years of Tom Brady and they deserve to give him $25 million. Did you see how they bowed out in week 17 of the football season last year? To the Miami Dolphins, to a seemingly meaningless game for New England where they let Brian Flores and Ryan Fitzpatrick kick their ass out of one of the top seeds, and then they got steamrolled by the Titans. Oh, yeah, I remember that. And I remember how bad Tom Brady was. He was Brian Hoyer bad.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? He couldn't move the ball. oh, they ran out of wide receivers. Like, I was sick of it. And this has been going on for a couple of years now. And you could tell that Brady was starting to really boil over the last couple of years. Rob Gronkowski was the first one 2 years before, the year before he retired, to finally say, got whispered in his ear, hey, football's not really so fun anymore. So then Gronk says, oh yeah, you know, football's not that fun anymore. Hey, Tom, I don't know if football here is that fun. I want to break the rules. You know, Bill's being a little too hard on us. This is kind of like, you know, football private school. I want to go and have a spring break party. Like, that's literally, so it got into Tom's head all of a sudden, and now Tom's turning back the clock and having this midlife crisis of saying.
Yeah, I mean, he is that old. We can call it a midlife crisis.
Oh, major midlife crisis.
Have you seen that facial work also? I mean, I don't like to.
I've had a number of male reporters ask me what Tom has gotten done. A lot.
That's all you can say.
Fillers. A lot of fillers. Fillers on the face to round out the cheekbones, the jaw, lifting up the eyebrows so you fill up the temples. I mean, this is so each area is about $1,000, okay? So you got to think about it. So cheeks, and you can see how, like, how rosy those apples are in the middle of his face. Botox so that he can't, you know, now he just can't move his head. And it doesn't do him any justice, the fact he's getting sunburned every day. That Florida sun sucks. Trust me, I know.
Hopefully he bought a couple nice new cars though.
I mean, I just don't care about his life anymore.
Crisis.
Is that weird?
No.
I don't care about Tom Brady anymore. I don't. I don't want to see him. It's the same old shit, and it's giving me flashbacks to when the Patriots really couldn't put it together. And you could start to tell the anger and the frustrations on the sidelines with McDaniels and Belichick. It wasn't fun anymore. Football became unfun. And now we're seeing the same thing. Listen, give Julian Edelman all the benefit of the doubt. He's 34 years old, turning 35. I mean, the dude's been knocked up more than Wes Welker. And you saw how bad Wes Welker bowed out of the league with all his concussions.
He was wearing a bobblehead for a helmet by the end there, Wes was.
Wes Welker, it was so embarrassing that you just saw the sparkles in his eyes. Every time he came up, just looked confused. I mean, just... It's starting to get bad, and you know, and when he had a couple of drops in that game against the Chiefs, people started to say, Julian Edelman has the most drops in the NFL since 2018. Okay, well, he also has 150 targets, maybe 60 targets more than your average wide receiver. We can't be basing those numbers off of anything. And I know that I will come out and say that I believed that when Cam Newton stepped into this offense, that the slot receiver position for the Patriots would be completely obsolete. I will rest on my sword. I said Julian Edelman and that role that Brady relied on so easily with Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman. I mean, on either side, the X receiver, quick outs, that was typical Patriots. I thought that wouldn't be a part of the offense this year. And of course, we're seeing a lot more RPOs and a lot of things that Cam Newton has done in the past with the Panthers. Because they're implementing him into that season. You're going to start to see more of, you know, the new nuances of the Patriots offense as they're giving him more the chance to throw and unleash down the field. And you're not going to see Cam running 30 times a game because that's going to, again, risk his health. And God forbid that Cam gets hurt. The Patriots season is over with the shithole quarterbacks that are behind him. You know, this offense is going to be a lot different in a couple of weeks. I'm worried about Jules, and I'm worried almost too if the Patriots are going to do something like sell high and, you know, get Julian to a better place where, you know, he can be under less duress. And I know it's going to hurt for a lot of Patriots fans, but again, this team is going to continue to look a lot different over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot. Their foundation as a spread power run team, you could almost say that, I hate to go back to this Cam versus Tom discussion, but you can almost say that Cam's better built for it. You know, he gives him
Oh, power rushing?
Yeah, the power run game.
Well, I mean, Bill Belichick has long since admired a quarterback that was able to scramble and make plays on the run. And, you know, a lot of his top running game, I mean, here's another thing about the Patriots' run game. Don't tell me every fantasy football guru, God love you, Michael Fabiano, and everyone else, I see it on my timeline constantly. Oh, if J.J. Taylor is available in your Patriots League, be sure to pick him up. Okay. If Damian Harris is available in your fantasy league, go pick him up.
Don't forget Rex Burkhead.
If Rex Burkhead is definitely available in 30% of the leagues, because some people have him in their flex, how about you take no Patriots running back in your fantasy league?
Or skill position player in general?
No. I mean, yeah. Asiasi has been a bust. I mean, for the most part, we got Ryan Izzo. The offense is completely unpredictable. And I mean, I know that they've liked to have that in the past for a number of different reasons. When you don't have a weapon like Rob Gronkowski as a first ballot Hall of Famer at tight end, it's going to look a little different. But I mean, I got to say, this new look Bill Belichick thing, where he's just being completely upfront and honest about everyone's injuries. He's pretty much had it with Sony Michel. And might I borrow a line from my good friend Mark Janes? Phony Michel. First round running back.
He looked so good that first year too.
He looked okay. He didn't, for a first round running back, Will, that's not enough production.
He was no Zeke Elliott.
No, it doesn't matter though. He's never lived up to the type of production that a first-round running back is supposed to have. And then the second year. And then the injuries. And then he comes back, and then he's back and being injured. Okay, all right. Well, there's only so much leeway that you can give this kid. And then all of a sudden, when you bring some 5'6", odd-job type, secret weapon running back who's running his ass off and threatening to steal the starting running back position from Sony Michel, and then all of a sudden, that's when he has a career fucking game? Get him out of here. I'm done. I don't know about anyone else, but the fact that Bill Belichick the next game was like, yeah, you're going on IR. Literally, he just doesn't care. 2020 Bill is one of the best Bills I've ever seen.
You're a big 2020 Bill guy.
I'm a big 2020 Bill guy.
What was that
guy.
Shirt that he was wearing?
Oh, that was a made-up shirt.
Oh, no.
There was a made-up shirt. There was a shirt that's out there that's like... it's not the happily miserable one, but the one with all the bullet holes, you know, coming out of the film room after getting 2 hours of sleep and watching round the clock of this 2-0, once 2-0, John Gruden, Las Vegas Raiders, and Bill comes out of the zombie room going for a Zoom meeting. God, I'm glad that we were in between an interface. I'm sure he hadn't showered in a few days either. Oh, man. I don't know. But I got to say... And I got to leave you at this before we jump into some weekend predictions. No matter how much the Patriots are going to be good or be bad, no one gives a fuck about the Buffalo Bills. No one is mentioning AFC East leading Buffalo Bills.
The 4-0 Buffalo Bills.
Josh Allen is on an MVP type season, and I will tell you that. I think that the Bills are going to beat the Patriots both times that they see them, and I'll tell you that.
Me too.
No one in the NFL is going to be writing headlines about the Buffalo Bills being good, period.
Until they win a playoff game. I think I
until
I genuinely...
they until they go to the AFC Championship game. I would even bring it that. They're just the headlines are going to be dominated by the Patriots around the clock, regardless.
It's either, I mean, there's a lot of hate watching of the Patriots that always exists. I mean, just as a lifelong Bills fan, I mean, I fucking, even listening to you talk about the Patriots all the time, it's like,
oh yeah, you know, and then when I try to call you to, set up some interviews and shit for the podcast, and then you tell me, oh, I'll call you back, and I see you live tweeting the Bills game. Yeah, that sucks too.
Yeah, because Josh Allen's a
little... I don't care. I don't care, bro. Every fantasy, I got to tell you, fantasy team.
How is your fantasy team? Gabe Davis, pick him up.
Oh, I asked Will to do a number of different things for the podcast. Everything just always comes back to the Bills. You know, all the fantasy sleepers. Oh, you got to pick up this Bills guy.
Gabe Davis getting a lot of targets.
No, I'll pass. So on the topic of the weekend, since this is a female gambling show, I guess. Female gambling show. By the way, if you're just tuning in now, welcome to the Bat Signal Podcast. I'm Courtney Fallon, kind of a recheck. Oh, do we have a ad read?
We don't.
We don't?
No.
We don't have sponsors for the show.
We don't, no. Finalizing some stuff, but...
That was another thing I asked you to do.
For right now.
Yeah.
I know, but I'm finalizing
some
stuff. Okay,
all right. You got a lot of work to do.
A lot, yeah.
Yeah, you got a lot of work to
do. And I've got to throw this together and then make sure it gets
It together. We're going to go through some picks for the weekend.
It's almost... I mean, there were a couple of toilet bowls this weekend. A couple potential toilet
this
bowls.
Is this weekend, week five. Not only should they be canceling two more NFL games, they should just be canceling it and moving into a fucking week 18. Don't understand what the league is doing. We shall see in a couple of weeks if this really turns into a dumpster fire. But the slate of games on this schedule this weekend, it's pretty laughable.
I mean, where do you want to start? With toilet bowl one or toilet bowl two? Jacksonville, Houston?
Eagles at Steelers.
Eagles at Steelers.
Eagles, right, the 1-2-1 Philadelphia Eagles leading. Is that not the saddest story?
That tie's looking pretty good right now.
Is that not the saddest story over the last few years? The pride of the NFC East. The pride of that division.
With the New York football Giants and the America's team. And fucking the Eagles.
And then the
Washington
Redskins.
The football team. Come on
now. Yeah, Washington
Catch
football
yourself.
Team.
We were talking before we started recording. We both agree. We like that name.
No, I definitely like that name. I definitely would like there to be a better product on the field, just all around from everyone. I made the mistake of, of rooting for, saying the Cowboys were going to the Super Bowl because I got to tell you, I had a business trip down to Dallas maybe in the middle of September.
You drank the Kool-Aid?
Oh, I drank that Kool-Aid so hard. I spent an entire day and a half at AT&T Stadium doing a project, and I drank the Kool-Aid so hard. I came out of there with the biggest pom-poms in the world. It's really hard not to.
Yeah.
It's hard not to.
Yeah.
You just see those photos of Jerry Jones sitting with George H.W. Bush and all the celebrities of the days back in the 70s. And you're just in awe of the Hall of Fame quality of that franchise, which hasn't won since 1996. It's a long ass time ago. Anyways.
And a historically bad defense.
They continue to invest in linebackers and they continue to disappoint. So the Eagles at Steelers, what I read about this game, it's a huge test for the Eagles offense. The Steelers have blitzed more than any team in the league over 54% of the time, and they are the number one team in pass rush win rate. That sounds like the Steelers are going to steamroll the Eagles.
They are a 7-point favorite, and I predict that they will cover that.
Okay, you easily. Got that. From his easily. Mouth to my thoughts. Cardinals at Jets, which I think is getting postponed. Joe Flacco is starting for the New York Jets. It's one of those things.
How about that?
I love in preseason when you play the game of, did you remember that this guy is on this team? Like Joe Flacco is a Jets quarterback. Who in their right mind would take the points in this game when the Jets are 0-4 against the spread? Regardless of having Joe Flacco, Mr. Elite, as a quarterback, Adam Gase should have been fired 5 weeks ago. And yes, I know, 5 weeks ago is before the season. If they go 0-5, there's no way in hell that this guy
next?
Is... I mean, he's a horrible coach.
That wouldn't be the hottest take. Well, yeah, I mean...
No.
Do you
the
remember
hottest,
how he got his job?
You know what? Adam Gase is a very strange guy. He was a terrible coach in Miami. He left that team a mess. He did nothing with that franchise. Brian Flores stepped in and actually did something, brought some stability to that team. The New York Jets are once again one of the dumpster fire teams. And I mean, it's probably one of the worst Jets teams I've ever seen in years.
That's saying something.
If Adam Gase gets fired, he will never get a coaching job again in the NFL. That's my thought. He's done. Like, he's just out of the league. So,
What if Joe Flacco? I mean, this is a big if.
Joe Flacco will be saving his goddamn
what
job.
If he, that's what I'm saying. What if he goes out and balls out? What do you do with Darnold?
I mean, you still keep him at bay. Darnold's not that bad. He's better than Jared fucking Stidham.
Yeah.
He's better than Jared Stidham.
He's a lot better than Jared
Stidham. Jared Stidham's not even taking scout team reps at this point. That's how bad he is. That's how bad your presumed starter is.
But,
and
so
he
you
just
like,
gave up.
So you like Arizona with the points there, 7.
I like Arizona with the points there. I think Kyler Murray has underperformed over the last couple of weeks. I know that they kind of fell flat. They lost to the Detroit Lions, who desperately needed a win. That was a home game. The connection between him and DeAndre Hopkins has not really bode well for them. I know that they had some injuries at running back, but Cliff Kingsbury, he's the quarterback whisperer. I think their offense is going to get back on track against, an easy opponent in this week. So I'm taking Arizona with that one.
Okay, let's move on to Carolina-Atlanta, because I like this game a lot, actually. Teddy Two Gloves.
So Robbie Anderson is a guy that I have on my fantasy team.
Yeah.
And he went from someone who was bounced around. He dropped his draft stock. He was one of those guys that was kind of written off. He had attitude issues. He made some really razzle-dazzle plays with the Jets. He has really found a home, and it surprised a lot of people. As typically, he's the number one wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers in an offense. I haven't watched too many of the Panthers games, but Teddy Bridgewater is a guy that I've been rooting for ever since that devastating injury. Oh my God, I'll never forget that day. And he was airlifted to the hospital.
He almost lost his leg.
The comeback story, he went 4-0 with the Saints last year. He deserves that $20 million salary. And, you know, Matt Rhule starting to come back on his heels. And Matt Rhule has coached Robbie Anderson before. So I think that they've got a good thing going there.
I think they have a good thing going too, especially on defense. They're aggressive. They press the majority of the time. I just think that's going to be a good matchup. I know Atlanta's not the greatest team in the world, but they're a 1.5-point favorite. Vegas must be seeing something that I'm not, because I see the Panthers winning this one easily.
Dolphins at 49ers. When are we going to see Tua Tagovailoa on the field this year?
I don't think we're going to.
I don't either.
It's sad.
I don't either.
He's fun. He's left-handed.
It's sad. You know what? Miami, they can suck it. They're in the NBA Finals. We got a big NBA Finals guest coming up right after a couple more minutes of football.
Teaser.
I think the Dolphins are going to keep it close. Ryan Fitzpatrick is not a bad quarterback. And I think that when Chad O'Shea left that organization earlier this year, a lot of people thought, damn, you're bringing back Chan Gailey. What is this, the dinosaur offense? But Chan Gailey and Ryan Fitzpatrick have a lot of history together. And I think that it's working. I think the Dolphins are going to keep this close, because the 49ers, they have been absolutely decimated on defense with injuries. Both of those games being played at MetLife Stadium, I swear, they should file a class action lawsuit against that turf over there at East Rutherford.
It is rough.
That's devastating.
Sticky turf.
Yeah.
Sticky turf.
The good news for them, Jimmy Garoppolo is coming back in this game, returning to play. I think the Dolphins keep it close, but I think the 49ers win this game.
So that would be +9.
Yep.
Miami +9.
Okay.
All right.
I think they cover.
Yeah, I think they cover too.
Okay.
Fitzpatrick is always going to keep him in the game. And how good would he sound in New England right now? Holy shit.
No.
Compared to what you got.
I think that as much as Cam Newton is going to have, a very high price tag on his name for next season, there's also a guy named Aaron Rodgers who's going to be leaving the Packers in the next couple of years. And you know that that's going to happen. And you want to talk about a guy at the top of his game right now? Aaron Rodgers is the guy. However, that's another story for another day. Final game on the docket before we switch gears to the NBA. Giants at Cowboys. Oh, boy.
Continuing our toilet bowl theme.
I mean, but literally, these games are just dumpster fire. Like, you actually could probably win a lot of money this weekend.
I think
you could win a lot of money this weekend because these games are so lopsided. I mean, who you think the Cowboys are going to pick things back up?
Not with that defense.
I mean, listen, it's not Dak Prescott's fault. And I think, honestly,
he's on pace for 5,500 yards.
I would take Dak Prescott as a quarterback for the New England Patriots. Why don't we swap? Why don't we swap teams? I actually think that that would be a fantastic hot take. Give Cam Newton to the Cowboys and take Dak Prescott. Would you do it? Would you do it?
I'd do it at Dak's.
With unlimited numbers.
Unlimited numbers, I'd do it, yeah. I'd do it.
In a heartbeat.
You're getting somebody who's younger, more durable. I don't think Dak's not missed many games in his career.
No, Dak is fantastic. And, you know, as much as he's not worth $40 million a year, he's certainly guaranteeing and garnering a number that's somewhat in that price range. I think the Cowboys bounce back and they take this one.
Yeah, I think so too. I think they're going to run with it. Two touchdowns.
Okay. Yeah. All right. That's a pretty bold prediction. Coming up next, a very special guest to the podcast.
I think you said it. You thought there was going to be a Celtics-Lakers final. Did the real team make the finals?
Right, yeah. I think...
Celtics, actually, okay, now I got to take the hat off.
Yeah.
What's wrong with this Celtics team? And is it the chemistry with the players in the locker room, or is it something that Danny Ainge needs to rearrange? Obviously, you know that they need a big. But what help me digest. The pieces just don't put into place. And a lot of people have their opinions, but I'm not quite sure. What's wrong with the Celtics?
Too many Indians. I don't see a chief.
Okay. Yeah.
The Indians are amazing. I just don't see a chief.
Yeah. Okay.
I see three that are possible, but someone has to grab the mantle and lead. And right now you can be young and lead. There needs to be a strong voice, and I don't see a strong enough voice to the league.
Mm-hmm.
Someone needs to vocally be a voice to the rest of the league that says this is our team, but I'm leading this and you're going to have to contend with me. I thought it would be Jason at this point in time. I just don't see enough. I don't see enough vocal leadership there. Jaylen Brown has, I think, done it in areas at different times. But I don't know if they're following him that way yet. And then Kemba Walker has always been that silent leader. But he may, you know, someone needs to evolve into the next iteration of their game, not necessarily their play, just more their voice. Because you have it in a coach. I love the coach. I think he's great. I think he's guided the group in a group sense. He's kept a lot of great players focused on the core values of why they're all together. But still, at the end of the day, there has to be an alpha among the alphas. And there can be two, and I'm okay if the two rise to the top and the two don't get along. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
They respect each other and challenge each other. But there's an iteration that has to go to another level, and it's kind of sitting there, but someone has to take it. And this league in general. You end up taking a championship. You end up really taking a lot of what you want from this league. It's never given to you. You can glide around and float around and be really good in this league. But to stand out to the level of excellence, of legacy and legend status, you turn into a bully and you start taking things. And I don't know if I see enough bullies on the Celtics.
I think that they are bullies with each other. Did you play for Rick Pitino when you were drafted by the Celtics?
I played for Red Auerbach drafted me back in 1991, and I played six years for the Celtics. 1 year with Larry Bird, two with Kevin McHale, three with Robert Parrish. Played in the old Boston Garden and in the new Fleet Center at the time, and played there for 3 years. And then Rick Pitino came in. He and I had a few conversations, thought we were going to work together, but he had a gaping hole in the center position, which he needed to fill. We had two picks at the time, We were hoping to get the first and second in the draft that year. We ended up with the two worst picks we could possibly get, a third and a sixth. Yeah. So we needed a big guy, and he went and signed Travis Knight. I don't know if you remember Travis Knight, to a 7-year deal for $21 million. And Rick was, I think, stepping into the – he'd been in the NBA before, if I recall. I can't remember. I think he had been with the Knicks. But he was stepping back in and taking over responsibilities, not only as a coach but as a GM and president. I think he had everything under his umbrella.
He had the Bill O'Brien juice.
Yeah, he had a lot of juice.
All the plays, be the GM, the coach, everything.
Yeah, but I was one person he couldn't supersede, and that was David Stern. And so when he made the decision to sign Travis Knight before he got me figured out under the cap, it triggered a reaction from the league and from David. And he forced Rick to pick between one of the two. And, in Rick's defense, he did come along with Red Auerbach. They did call me right away, and they said, hey, we made a mistake. We don't want to lose you. We want to keep you here, but we need you to wait until January to sign a contract. I was like, oh, well, let me get this straight. Tell me you wanted me to be your captain for your new team, and yet you chose a rookie from the Lakers instead. So I decided to open up my options at that point, wished them well, and ended up obviously moving out west.
Even still, as you left, the Celtics have a gaping hole at center. So nothing really has changed. It's remarkable to me that you remind me about your years with the Celtics and all of the names that you had mentioned. And then technically you moved on to another destined team that won three NBA champions. You played with Kobe Bryant and Shaq and yourself playing a huge role on that team. What was the best team that you played on, I would say, of those 3 years with the Lakers?
So there was, I would say 2000 and 2001, the second year after we figured out how to win. We made it through that 2000 season, won our first championship together. The group at the core of the second one was a group of guys that came in and really from Kobe to Shaq. Derek Fisher was drafted the same year as Kobe Bryant. Myself, I was free agent at sign, and Robert Horry was traded in. That core group of five guys, I think anchored, we'd gone through a lot of losing together. We got swept by the San Antonio Spurs. We got swept by the Utah Jazz. These 2 years in a row, we just, we couldn't put it together. But when we finally did, we kind of got our chance as a nucleus of five guys to go forward and figure out how to dominate. And we got on a wavelength that was pretty special. We won a third one, but it wasn't the same wavelength we were on that second year. We were pretty invincible. We had other great players there too, Bron Harper, Brian Shaw, Horace Grant came in from the Bulls era, and so Devin George. We had a nice deep nine, guys that that year were pretty invincible.
Speaking of the Lakers now, obviously it's a different type of Lakers team. This isn't nine deep of players, but you have an incredible dynamic, potentially one of the greatest. I know we shouldn't determine who is the greatest, but LeBron James, a three-time champion with two other teams. You have a guy, like Anthony Davis with a role on the defensive end. He has role versatility and the ability to guard bigs and guards. What's better? Is it having a robust roster where you can rotate guys in off of the bench, having that full bench, having that full starting five, or really like this Lakers team is just having the right pieces that fit?
Yeah, but the pieces have to fit. I think you have to be anchored with special players, at least two of them. Sometimes it's unfortunate you can get three of them. But having a 1-2 punch, as we had with Shaq and Kobe in the case here, LeBron and AD, that's gonna be a great starting point for any franchise. In the case of the Lakers, we've done that well over the years. We've always been able to find one or two players that are at the top, 5 to 6 players in the league. And when you put the right pieces around individuals like that, especially to some degree, I think everyone has to be a defensive oriented efficient defender. Mm-hmm. And you have to actually be able to think the game at a high level. So you may not be a star in your own right from, say, 3 to 7 on the roster, but you're able to support superstars and at moments in the season or in a series, play like a superstar, even if it's only for a quarter or two. And you've seen that. I mean, KCP in the last game was an example of that. We've seen Danny Green be that over the course of his career. I'm watching Kuzma. You know, I have spots as a young player of figuring it out. And then Caruso. I mean, Caruso and Rondo. I mean, you can't forget Rondo, who's been a Celtic and now a Laker, who's won championships in Boston. And it just, you can tell, makes the right play at the right time to get it done. So I've been impressed with the collective, but at the anchor of all of that is LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And if you start there, you're going to have a pretty darn good shot to have some success.
Do you think this Lakers team is a team of destiny?
I definitely feel with, you know, the tragic loss of Kobe in January and the COVID environment and the bubble, there's a lot that I think could have transpired in that down period, especially with age, an individual like LeBron. Some of those players on that team are not young. You know, so when you shut the body down for a period of time like that and try to start it up again, that's pretty hard to do. And especially at the age that LeBron is at. And I don't think he ever shut it off, which was smart on his part, kept the faith that they would return.
Yeah.
And he stayed sharp, as did Rondo, as did AD and the rest of the guys on that team. They stayed sharp, and they met the challenge of that bubble probably better than anyone, except maybe the Phoenix Suns for that 5-game stretch. They just went bananas. How many games they went bananas for. But I've been impressed. And I think it's destined because of the focus, the central focus of the Laker organization right now is in the season alone has been honoring Kobe Bryant and everything that he's meant to us as an organization and to those players. Obviously a huge mentor and an influence on their own personal careers. LeBron's won, and AD has won gold medals in the Olympics with him. So there's a tight bond that has kept the focus on playing the game the right way, keeping it about the Laker organization and winning a championship and really ending this season in honor and remembrance of Kobe Bryant.
Yeah. Going back to that day, I've known you personally for about 15 years, goes back family ties. You're probably the only connection that I've ever had to Kobe. I think I probably back in the day had walked past him, and that's probably the deepest connection. But we all know Kobe had a greater purpose in life, and he was destined for great things. And we lost him so tragically on that day. And unfortunately, in the onset of media, your name had been tied into that helicopter crash, something that really dropped me to my knees. It was devastating, and I know the pain that your family went through. What were those first 30 minutes like for you? How many fires did you have to put out? What was it like?
It was paralyzing and horrific. Just to be digesting the possibility that what I was seeing on television was real. Didn't want to believe that at all. First places I went to were to my kids because I just wanted to make sure if they were getting this news that Kobe had passed or was in that helicopter crash, that they heard it from me and that I could talk to them. I could talk them through it. And also I just needed to connect with them in that moment. And as the phone was just kind of ringing and ringing and ringing, I just assumed in that moment as I was talking to them that people wanted to just, you know, talk about the horrific, you know, tragedy that happened. And I figured I would get to them at some point. But it just kept, you know, people that were closest to me, like my friend King Rice, who I've known for, you know, since college, and my sister, they just kept calling over and over and over. And I finally hung up with Sasha and I answered, and it was my buddy King, and he was just bawling. He was crying. And initially I thought he was crying as, and I started to cry too. But he said, thank God you're alive. And it kind of threw me for a loop. And I didn't understand why he would think I would be you know, I'd passed. And they're reporting that you were in the helicopter. And at that moment, I was so glad, I'd spoken to my kids. And then again, like I said, my phone just would not stop. I answered my sister. I answered Scooter Braun, who was at the Grammys. And he was just, you know, wanting to hear my voice to make sure that he could let everybody know there that I was okay. And I just, for about the next hour, it was literally like just talking people off a ledge, my mom, you know, making sure that they realized I was still here and that I was okay. But at the same time, I really felt robbed of a moment to mourn and to actually, you know, stop. And I wanted to drive out to the site. I didn't get to do that. There was a lot of things that I found myself managing in that moment that I didn't expect to manage. And then I became a part of the story, which wasn't really about, and shouldn't have been about me at all. It should have been just about, you know, his family and how they were doing and trying to connect to them and supporting them. So I was glad that the people I love and care about, I was able to, you know, at least calm their nerves and give them peace. But then we ended up again crying again about the fact that we all lost somebody special to us.
What was the last conversation that you had with Kobe? Did you have plans together for the future? I know Stephen A. Smith had talked about running into Kobe during a New Year's Eve party, and the smile was ear to ear, and he had so many things he was working on in his life, and he was at his happiest peak. Can you share like one of your last conversations with him, or just a memory that you would like to remember him, not the sad times, just in happier days?
Yeah, I think one of the personal memories I have now that was the opportunity probably 8 months later that I was able to kind of say goodbye to him. It took me a minute. It really took me a long time to process him not being here and not seeing him, not talking to him, not watching him continue to progress in his impact on so many people in and outside of basketball, in the professional world of business, and just being an inspiration and a leader in general in life. I got a chance to go to Cody, Wyoming recently, and I was there just to connect with a friend, and I got to walk up about 10,000 feet in the air sit there at the top of this mountain, and I felt so close to God, but I also felt so close to Kobe in that moment, as it was just quiet and I was up there and I just felt, I felt his spirit, and I felt that we were there together, and I was alone. I just got to say thank you, and I got to say goodbye, and got to share, you know, one last tear, and I just started to think about all the things we experienced together and all the joy that we'd had. And I don't know, I just felt like he was just letting me know it was okay to get back to life and to continue to carry the torch that, you know, he was carrying, where he was just impacting so many people with the positive energy. He was being such an amazing father and husband to his family. It's drawn me closer to my kids, thinking about how precious our impact can be on our kids and on their life and their growth. How precious and impactful our lives can be to people around us, whether we're aware of it or not, by the things we do and the things we say and the way we carry ourselves. So I just felt inspired by that moment. I was really grateful for it. And I was glad I was able to really kind of say goodbye finally after such a long time. So we have lots of memories. I see him on social media daily. You know, the beauty of targeting and social media is they know exactly what I'd want to watch.
The Instagram algorithms are just
Instagram algorithms been amazing. In that regard, I get a Kobe fix, I kid you not, on a daily basis. I'm seeing stuff from him that I never saw before. And I'm appreciating the fan love and art and tributes it just really warms my heart, and I get to see it. So he's still here with me in my phone daily. And I love coming across just highlights and memories of us together and seeing us, you know, at different times. But it was he was a dear friend, and my life changed immensely being connected to him and the rest of the Laker organization. But it changed immensely getting to know him.
One of the most remarkable things about Kobe, because I know that you're sharing a sentiment that a lot of people also felt, and a lot of people around the world, it is so remarkable that one person can have an impact as much as Kobe did, obviously with his connection to basketball globally and him reaching out to the WNBA. Of all of the attributes that Kobe had, he was a father, he was a friend, he was a mentor. His connection with LeBron James, and I can only imagine the feelings and the emotions that LeBron is trying to fulfill a dream for Kobe. Mm-hmm. You said it yourself. It made you pretty spiritual. Mm-hmm. Do you know the extent of that relationship or how much Kobe is on LeBron's mind as well, just to fulfill and get the Lakers banner 17, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had one moment with LeBron since he's been out here, and it was a quiet, special moment for me because I am so grateful for, first of all, his courage to enter a situation like the Laker organization at a time where it had been in such a drought since Kobe left, and Kobe's such a monumental figure, as is Magic and Kareem and so many, Jerry West and so many of the other legends that have been legends of basketball, let alone legends in the Laker lore. But so much courage to make the transition. Could have gone anywhere in the league. Could have stayed in Cleveland. Could have gone back to Miami. He could have done a lot of different things. But he chose to acknowledge the Laker organization by coming and accepting that challenge, putting that on his back, on his shoulders, to try and return it to the position it's in right now. But I was just really grateful to him for really in Kobe's passing, really stepping into that position of really accepting the only thing that would probably soothe the pain of the city and all of the fans that love the Lakers and love Kobe, which would to be honor him by guaranteeing we get through this season with a championship. And yeah. And I could just sense that in the moment we got to share that really it was about that for him. And no matter what he came here to do, whether it was his own legacy or not, that he was willing to put that on hold to focus on just honoring Kobe and honoring his legacy and the memory of him this season. And so I was just grateful for that. And it was actually the last game before the season was shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the Lakers Clippers, and I didn't get to see him. I haven't gotten the same chance to see him since, but I really appreciate all of them, but also him for taking that responsibility to another level.
Yeah, Game 5 is later tonight. Personally, to me, watching the Celtics going up against a very talented Miami Heat team, you know what Pat Riley is capable of doing and putting this together, and I got to tell you. In those waiting moments of game six of the Celtics and Heat, Pat Riley's face was just monotone. It was silent. And I think that because he knew of what he was going up against with the Lakers in that next round and the powerhouse. And I mean, at least in my opinion, there's nothing that the Heat can do that will stop the Lakers tonight from taking the championship. Why is it going to be so convincing when the Lakers win either tonight or in game six?
Well, I would give the Heat a lot of credit for piecing together what they put together this year. I mean, it's impressive to beat a Celtic team that I thought it was going to be a Lakers Celtic finals.
Yeah.
So I've been impressed with Jimmy Butler, his leadership, but also just the growth of young hero and
Adebayo.
Adebayo. and that crew at large. They got a bright future ahead of them, but I think just the experience of LeBron and what he is able to guide a group of men through to finality of a championship is going to, I think, is a little too much for the Heat this year. Yeah. I don't necessarily think they'll go out quietly. They could win tonight. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Heat win tonight. But I just think at the end of the day, LeBron will this team to a championship if he has to drag them to the finish line himself personally. And I thought he was pretty passive in game three. I think we saw him even a little more passive in game four than he should be probably. But they got the win, you know, in that fourth quarter. He made the plays he needed to make. But I think tonight you'll see him seize the moment and be more aggressive.
Talking about some other stuff in your life, you are a former esports franchise owner. I know your son Kyle is a gamer. The Einstein hair is something. You got something going on in there. Yeah. You got something going on. Something's brewing. Besides the hikes to Wyoming and, you know, giving thanks and gratitude. Well, what's Rick Fox been up to?
A little bit of the norm, which is the entertainment career is shut down out here for the most part. No TV and movie work for a lot of us. I'll start some of that up again in the new year. In the meantime, the esports and gaming universe has been a big part of my life the last 6 years. Sold out of my esports org a year ago, and had partners that wanted to reap this the 30x success we had. They figured, hey, very few investments make you 30x your money, so they wanted to get out. I couldn't argue with that. Wasn't really happy about it, but I shifted into making video games. So I started a company with two very established, seasoned legends of game development. And the three of us formed a company about a year ago. And we'll bring a game, our first game, to the market in a year, probably at the end of 2021. But it's garnered a lot of really prominent investment and some really talented industry folks that are a part of it as well. So I'm excited about that. Believe it or not, the dad in me has dominated the COVID era. Tasha and I have spent a ton of time together. We and Kyle and as well, walking and talking, working out, and trying to stay connected. I think they know their dad a lot better than they knew him before, because they've gotten to spend the kind of time and ask the kind of questions that I think they would have probably asked later on as they gotten older. But we got to some of that a lot sooner than probably I expected to get to. But we had a lot of time on our hands, so I think they know a lot of stories about me in college. They know a lot more about me than we probably should know.
Right now. I need a Rick Fox UNC story.
my
first clapback question was going to be, you know, movie star Rick. You've always been, you know, it was you and Ray Allen.
Yeah.
Did Ray back in the day, he really got game?
Ray and I came across, I can't post these. I wish I had them here somewhere. I don't know where they're at. But I came across some Polaroids from He Got Game. We shot that infamous scene. We took Polaroids for some reason. I don't know who did or why, but I kept them. And I came across these Polaroids from that infamous shoot. And the young ladies at the time were professionals, actual professionals, and famous professionals too. So I think we thought it was funny to have these Polaroids of documenting that scene. But yeah, have them somewhere. He Got Game was, I have a He Got Game story that I always look back on and I think, and it was the audition day. The audition day that I drove from Boston to New York to audition for Spike Lee. And the reason I even got the audition was because I walked up to him at half court of a Celtic Knicks game. And I asked him if he, you know, had an apprenticeship or if I could come work with him in the off season, because I wanted to be in the entertainment industry when I was done playing basketball. And said he was making a movie and told me that that if I came down when the season was over, then I could audition for a role. And so I drove down and I did that, and I walked into the audition room office and signing in, and out walks Mila Jovovich. She was a model at the time and hadn't really acted. It was her first acting role as a prostitute in this movie. She went on to obviously do all of the Resident Evil movies and a ton of other movies. She became a big star. She walked by, and then as I was signing in walked an 18-year-old Rosario Dawson, who had just gotten off of this movie Kids, I guess. It was like a hit. I didn't know who she was. Young girl signing in as well. And she asked to borrow my headphones so she could work on her scene. And I lent her my headphones. And then I signed in, and Ray came in and Travis Best came in, and we went in to do the audition. And in the room was Spike Lee and Aisha Tyler, I think it is her name, the casting director. I hope I got her name right. It's been so long. We did the scene, and the scene went really well, and we hear this clapping, and Spike and the casting director are clapping, and we're wondering who's clapping, and sitting on the floor in the closet with the door off was Denzel Washington, and he like stuck his head out, and the first time we all met Denzel, but it was in that moment that, you know, he was kind of giving us the thumbs up for the audition and kind of signing off on us with Spike and the casting director. And you know, the rest is history. He Got Game was, you know, shot 20-something years later. It's like one of the greatest basketball movies ever made. And so that's a memory I have of playing at college. Chick Deegan, I played Chick Deegan, the college player that recruits Ray Allen's character, Jesus Shuttlesworth, to Tech U. I fail. Two people I successfully failed. I call it successfully failing. Two people I successfully failed at recruiting to college was Shaquille O'Neal to North Carolina. Took him out to a club, and all the girls were more paying attention more to me than him. And so he was like, I can't come here.
That's always the worst. You can't someone that's going to get all the girls that are.
Yeah, it was just like, it's not going to work for me here.
No, I'm out.
Yeah. And then Ray Allen, Jesus Shuttlesworth. I failed to recruit him to Tech U, but I hear there's a remake in a reboot in the making is what I keep hearing with Denzel and Denzel. I'm sorry, with Spike and Ray, their conversations have been ongoing. They just have to kind of get Denzel across the line, probably to want to do a sequel of that. But man, I'm telling you, I can't play a college student any longer. I'd have to play like either the coach, John Turturro. Remember John? I'm a great actor. He was he was my coach in that movie. He was my coach in He Got Game.
Man.
So it's pretty.
Maybe you can play the mentor role.
Yeah, or I could play.
Would play a great the Ray Allen's role? Would it be Kyle Kuzma? I mean, just based on personality alone and looks, who's like the playboy of the NBA now?
Well, have you seen the Stephen Marbury documentary? Great documentary.
It's really Jesus
Shuttlesworth has really kind of, I think, patterned after him and his life in Coney Island. Today's players, maybe Ja Morant is pretty, I think, a pretty good character. You'd probably want it to be a young, flashy, talented. I think actually Jason Tatum could probably be a good Jesus Shuttlesworth.
What about Deuce though? Deuce has got his son's got to have a role.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. He's
like a playboy with a baby on his head.
Yeah. I don't know who's. Oh, Booker. Booker's probably. Yeah,
Devin Booker.
Devin Booker's probably a good run at it as well. If it was a Laker, I could see Kyle Kuzma.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to Space Jam too. I'm looking forward to seeing LeBron pull off Space Jam too. So,
is LeBron a good actor? I mean, like, I don't know. I mean, you've worn so many hats. So you know, whether you choose that pop star movie star Rick is better than the basketball player Rick, but just given your eye in the acting world. How's LeBron as an actor?
I like him on camera. I've liked him. I loved him in Trainwreck. I really did. I said I'm anxious to see him in Space Jam 2. I think he's going to always surround himself with great directors and great talent, and play to that, play to his strength, allow them to really actually make him, guide him through, you know, performances that are really, you know, respectable and good. I love what he's done off the camera, you know, behind the camera as a producer and a media mogul. It's been extremely impressive. It really gives an example of what is possible for so many athletes that are now making so much money and what they can do with their brands and their influence and their finances to grow their careers outside of basketball. And content creation is a great example of that. Storytelling is another great example of that. A lot of these guys are doing it around their brands, but now they can actually find other stories and amplify other voices. And LeBron's been doing that, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does. There's a movie role that I think with Happy Madison that he's doing a movie called Hustle. I think that they've reached out to me about. I'm hoping it goes forward, because I think there's a role in there that I might be able to join that universe and bring that to light with them. You know, that would be fun to do. And then there's one other thing that he's doing. Oh, I can't. I follow him closely because I just.
The sit down wine table discussions.
Yeah, the barbershop on HBO.
Yeah, the barbershop stuff.
Yeah, those have been great. I love seeing other legends of sport or entertainment, music, get in there and actually have discussions about poignant topics that give you a greater sense of who those people are in their lives, what they're about, you know, what they stand for. That's really an interesting take. It reminds me of the Jon Favreau dinner for five. Like, they used to have the dinner around the table. You're probably too young to remember that series, but John kind of did a version of that around the dinner and would have, you know, interesting people from Hollywood, directors, writers, actors, and they would talk film, and I used to love that show too.
Last question from me, and this has been fantastic. First of all, I think that your next documentary should be about the Polaroids from the scene of you and Ray Allen. I think you should just walk in and be like, Denzel, listen, I got these. Build a story around them. Anyways, Rick, yes. Besides watching the Lakers, win in the NBA Finals, what is the future look like for Rick Fox? What, you know, given all the wisdom, I can feel how much, you know, older you've grown just in terms of, you know, your perspective in life. And although through tragedy, you have found triumph. What's the future look like for you in terms of what you want to do with your career and just goals and lessons that you want to bestow upon either your children or other people in the NBA, other players?
Well, I think that one of the beauties that comes with growing older and still being here, is, you know, you start to reflect on not only what you've done or what you should have done, or you start to look towards what is left and what is possible to get done. And in my case, you know, I've been blessed to play in so many different universes and have such, you know, such success. But it's a lot of the failures that have kind of informed me, which has allowed me to inform my kids, but also maybe inform others of what pitfalls are out there and how to maneuver around them. You don't have to actually make the same mistakes to learn from them. You can learn from others' mistakes, and I've made my full share of those. So I'm trying to step out of the shame of them and share them and embrace them as life lessons for others. And then there's just the give back, right? The give back of how can I impact the world in a way that changes it for the better? We're in the midst of obviously a lot of conversation around just social good and social justice and the improvement of our own country, but the world at large. I've taken interest myself personally the last year and have started another company that is really focused on sustainable building and the environment. And we have a patent around green cement that we're going to bring to the world that I believe is going to change the world for for the better when it comes to, you know, just pollution and emissions and carbon emissions. And our stuff is acts like a tree. So think of cement that acts like a tree, and that's what we're working on next in the next 10 years of my life beyond my business interest. This is kind of my sustainable environment give back.
Rick Fox, changing the global economy, you're changing climate change, you're changing basketball, you're changing everything. This has been so fantastic. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Go Lakers, I guess.
Yeah, I know. It's hard for you guys. Hard for you to say there. But what the thing we did in our championship experience is that we beat on each other constantly. We challenged each other constantly. But when we stepped in the arena, man, you could not pick on a teammate of mine. You could not go at a teammate of mine. That was my teammate to challenge. That was my teammate to fight with behind the scenes. And I would go to the death for a teammate against anyone else in the league.
Yeah.
Because that was my teammate. And I'm telling you, I had a lot of teammates I did not like. But, man, I tell you, when we put that uniform on, I had nothing but their utmost respect for them. And like I said, I would take I'd go to the mat for them, over anyone else.
It's amazing, that insight. And I think that you just absolutely nailed it. I don't think personally that these, the Celtics players, they might like each other off the field, but I think on the field, on the court, that's the problem. And that's, what's creating this chemistry rift within this Celtics team. And a lot of people are blaming Danny Ainge and saying they need to bring in the next big name. And the next big name was Kyrie Irving, but Kyrie Irving was not in charge of Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is not the answer. And Kyrie Irving can't be the superstar by himself. That's why he brought in Kevin. He went to Brooklyn.
Look, there's only a few of those guys.
Yeah.
In the league. I mean, they're not. There's not like there's a ton of them that you can just go get. There's only a few of them, and they to the naked eye, it's not really easy to spot. But to those that have been through the years of chasing championships, I you can point them out. I can sniff them out and see them really quickly. And I don't see one on the Lakers. I don't see one on the Celtics yet. I don't know if you're born, if you evolve into that. I think it's something that you're born and have. I see five really, really great players on the Celtics right now. Like I see five really, really, really good players.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see that one guy that I go, yeah, I'm getting in line behind him. And I think you got to go find that, again, know that if someone has one of those guys, they're not just giving them up.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's only maybe like four or five of them out there. So it's hard. I mean, Tim Duncan was one of them. Kobe Bryant was one of them. Shaq was one of them. LeBron's one of them.
Kevin Garnett was one of them.
Sorry?
Kevin Garnett?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Chief.
Rondo's one of them. You get these when you stack three and four of those kind of guys on a team, now you're going somewhere. They got thick skin. They give it out, they dish it out, they can take it. They're warriors. They're nasty. They're not nice. They can be nice off the floor, but on the floor it's just like something comes out and they're just not nice guys on the floor. And they don't care whether you think they're nice or not.
You got to have that Pat Riley crazy mentality. I can't tell you there's one person in this league that can sniff out a chief. It's Pat Riley. I would say Jimmy Butler emerged into that chief. And
yep. That's why you saw he couldn't get along in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because as talented as those young players are, and I love them as people, they don't have that shark. They don't have that bite.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that dog. You call it that dog in them. They just don't. They kind of float through. And that's, similar situation in Boston right now. Competitive individuals, they compete. They're they're great players. They're all stars. They're talented. They'll win a lot of games. But at the end of the day, when you throw the basketball out, if you're all on that court and you said, okay, a fight's going to break out right now, who do you think is going to win? An actual fight.
Marcus Smart.
You didn't even doubt it, right? You didn't even doubt it. You didn't doubt it for a second, right? Like, to me, you take Marcus Smart off that team and put him on any other team, that the team that he goes to takes a spike up. Huge spike up.
I think he's got somewhat of the X factor a little bit, but I mean, the mood swings from being angry and trying to inspire in the wrong way. It's rubbed a lot of people.
Because it's this generation, the generation that we live in now. You can't tell people the truth. You can't talk to them the way maybe he grew up, you know, being talked to or talking to teammates like when he played, you know, as a younger player. That's the era I came from. I'd rather you tell me to my face what you think about something than, you know, tiptoe around me. I get body language and I use your words. Tell me what you got to say and then we'll just move on from there.
Do you think it's made this generation of basketball players a little soft?
Yeah, it's okay. It's a soft era. You know, this is it speaks to this generation in general. You know, it doesn't make it a bad era. I think the skills and the talent has grown, actually. I think the players today are far better players than, say, we were. I believe that. I think their skills are better. I think their talent level is better. But they don't beat each other up. They don't have to. It's just the rules of the game now. It's not their fault. It's a softer league, which is fine. But it makes it a more entertaining and more graceful league. I mean, do you want a game where Rick Fox is on the floor and I'm just literally beating the opponent up physically the whole game? That's not very attractive, you know? So it's a different era. I actually like it. I like it because I get to watch the players be really pull their skills out and put them to use instead of being, you know, the era of the 90s that I grew up in where, you know, the Knicks were beating you up and you were beating them up, you know?
Pistons.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I don't miss that at all. I tell you, these players are going to feel a lot different in their old age than I do right now, for sure.
All right, I'm going to leave you with this. One question. Top three greatest players of all time. According to Rick Fox.
Wow.
You're going to give me a top three, and there's no judging.
Mike is always going to be on my list. Kobe because of affection and Shaq because of affection.
Okay.
Those are my three.
Okay.
You know, Mike mentored me, and because of Shaq and Kobe, I got three championships. So it's hard for me to ever answer that question without an emotional attachment and feelings to it, you know?
You know what? I'm sure that if this made its way back to Shaq's desk, over at TNT with him and Charles, I think he would smile. So LeBron James not in Rick Fox's top three.
Yeah, he's number four.
He'll get there someday.
He makes the top five. He makes the top five. He gets on the court.
He's definitely not one of the soft ones in this NBA era.
I got a 4:00. It's so good to talk to you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Great job. Keep going. I'm following you.
That interview was absolutely fantastic. Rarely do you get an NBA great as candid as that, talking about the past and all the celebrities that he's run through. I mean, listen, Rick Fox is only 51 years old. He's got a lot more life to give and a lot more movies to make. And clearly he's got a lot of opinions on the new and the old age NBA. That's all the time we got for the show. Hope you will check in with us on Tuesday of next week. We'll see you then.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.